HubZero.org, a platform for scientific collaboration. You can follow along with this presentation by going to HubZero.org and downloading the corresponding slides. Enjoy the show.
Well, it's a great pleasure to be here at the HubZero annual meeting, and it's also great to be back in Indianapolis, where I, of course, lived here for many years. There's going to be a little bit of hub and cyber infrastructure, but the first part of the talk will be some background information on a very exciting development in the biomedical sciences and technology, namely stem cell technology. Of course, many of you know that more than a decade ago, there was a breakthrough in stem cell research, embryonic stem cell research. But more recently, there's been an even more dramatic discovery that the regular cells in your body, including skin cells from an adult, can be reprogrammed back into an embryonic-like state. And these so-called adult stem cells, or induced pluripotent stem cells, often abbreviated as iPS cells, show tremendous promise for medical breakthroughs. And so I'll say a little bit about that, and then talk about how this is related to cyber infrastructure challenges and some of the organizational efforts like that we have here with HubZero. So just to put us all on the same page, this is a schematic diagram of how you start out with cell type from a blastocyte. These are the pluripotent stem cells, and from that one cell type, you differentiate through all the different cells found in your body, which are over 200 different cell types. Okay, so this is one of the amazing facts of biology. And even for myself, even though I've been in the pharmaceutical and biomedical world for many years, you sometimes think of new ways of thinking about things you learn in the history of scientific science classrooms, including our history books, and it suddenly comes up so crystal clear when you think about this. So, for example, if you look at the fossil beds, and you look at this dramatic Cambrian explosion of different life forms, okay? Everybody learns that in their high school science books, and you look at the Burgess Shale in Canada, for example, with all the sudden explosion in the different types of cell types. And I never thought of it this way, but you can actually think of that as the invention of the stem cell. Okay? So before that, there was single cell organisms, like protozoa. And then the stem cell was invented. And then from stem cells, you get many different cell types, and you can get more complex life forms. Okay? So that Cambrian explosion that you see in the Burgess Shale is, in fact, our footprint, so to speak, of the invention of the stem cell. And even though the human body has more than 200 cell types, you don't go from 1 to 200 in one step. In fact, even today, there are organisms that have basically 3 or 4 cell types. Okay? So that's the organism. So you go from one stem cell to differentiate into about 3 or 4 cell types. And that's how that particular organism makes a living. And so you don't go from 1 to 200 in one step. There are these intermediate steps that even to this day are there as part of our living record. Okay. I also want to acknowledge Dr. Rupa Shavdi, and I'll mention her again later in the talk, because she has been responsible for training roughly 2/3 of the stem cell scientists in this country. And as we talk about the transition to adult stem cells or induced pluripotent stem cells, because of some specific techniques that have been developed that are proving to be extremely useful, especially for medical applications, it's not inconceivable that in the not-too-distant future, closer to like 100% of the stem cell scientists who use adult stem cells in the lab could very well be trained by Dr. Shavdi. And so that actually presents us with an opportunity to roll out an informatics and cyber infrastructure strategy. obviously, if the community's all out there doing their own thing, as our previous speaker has noted, it's an uphill struggle to get people to change, and you have to do a lot of work to get people to change their behavior. If, on the other hand, you're lucky enough to catch a field in its infancy before lots of bad habits have developed, there's an opportunity to architect an information vision and have the field start off in the right direction. So that's an underlying theme about this talk. So this is a very busy slide. And the next two slides, and I will leave copies of this slide here, so you can certainly print this poster. They're actually it's so big enough that it's actually on two pages. And this is by Linda Hogel, who is in the Department of Medical History and Bioethics at the University of Wisconsin. And the main thing I want to point out is that the roots of all scientific breakthroughs have a very deep history. And in this case, the very first entry goes all the way back to 1907. Just to point out that there's a very long history, and then some of the highlights, like the Time magazine, 1998, which I'll say a little bit more about that in a second, in which the stem cells were isolated. Yeah. And the year 1997, Dolly the sheep is first successful cloned mammal. So many landmarks. The dates in red are one way or another connected to the University of Wisconsin. So human embryonic stem cells, 1998. And these are just some quotes from NIH Director Harold Varmus. The development of cell lines that may produce almost every tissue of the human body is an unprecedented scientific breakthrough. It is not too unrealistic to say that this research has the potential to revolutionize the practice of medicine and improve the quality and length of life. And among other awards, it was science's breakthrough of the year in 1999, according to various sources. And this is a picture of Jamie Thompson, who isolated the human iPS cells, and Dr. Yu. Now, but we're going to talk about adult stem cells today, not the embryonic stem cells. Of course, many in the world have ethical concerns about the use of embryonic stem cells. It also turns out that there are some significant advantages from a medical perspective of iPS cells, induced pluripotent stem cells, or adult stem cells. For example, in the bottom diagram, we show the schematic here where you start with adult skin cells. And using advances in systems biology, and specifically the genes, the four genes that have been identified as playing a critical role, you basically reprogram, so think of it as reprogramming the cells back into their embryonic-like state, so they're undifferentiated stem cells, and then from there, you differentiate them back to the main cell types. And the three major cell types are related to blood cells, the neural cells, and the muscle cells. Okay, and but one important thing to note about the adult stem cells, of course, is that because it is your own cells in some sense, the issues related to from an immunological perspective, immune response is of obviously a significant advantage. So you can imagine a world of personalized medicine. This is the science fiction part of it that has people very excited, where you bank your own cells, your skin cells, for example, and they are then converted into these stem cells for future use in treating you many years later when you need them. Okay, so you can think of that as a vision of medicine in the future. Just to say a little bit, of course, many of you know that my name is associated with Purdue University, and I was an early supporter and fan of NanoHub and HubZero, and I still remember, as if it was like yesterday, some of the discussions that we had on the Purdue campus about the importance of supporting the hub-like projects. And what I have here at the University of Wisconsin campus is an opportunity to play out some of those theories as well and some of those ideas. Because what we have here are two institutes, a public institute, which is part of the University of Wisconsin, but also a private institute located on the university campus, sharing the building with the public institute. And the private institute is a medical research institute built on the premise that cyber infrastructure is an important part of the biological and medical sciences of the future, so that the medical research strategy of this institute features cyber infrastructure at the core and as an essential element of the strategy for building up the institute. So in some ways, it's an opportunity to blend my experiences at Eli Lilly and right here in Indianapolis and my experiences at Purdue in the Cyber Center. And this is the initial group of folks that we've recruited. Here's Jamie Thompson on the right. And there's Dr. Rupa Shevdi, who I cited earlier in this presentation. And a very important part of our team is Professor Miron Livni of Condor fame, who is also, in addition to being a professor at the University of Wisconsin, he's the chief technology officer of the Morgridge Institute for Research. Rock Mackey, co-inventor of tomotherapy for cancer treatment, Dr. Susan Millar for education research, and Paul Alquist, virology and the viral origins of cancer, who leads that particular area of Morgridge, is also a Howard Hughes medical investigator. And the tagline at the top says that the whole philosophy of this institute is discovery to delivery. So we're making a conscious effort that we're not just content to have exciting and important discoveries in biomedical sciences, but we want to think through the implication of those discoveries to actually deliver to the point of impacting human health. And once you start thinking like that, the role of information technology and cyber infrastructure to actually deliver on the promise is an important part of the strategy. Also important for this institute, as I said, it is on the campus, but if you look at the nearby neighborhood, you find that we are right across the street from computer science, also across another street from chemistry, engineering, the medical sciences, and various biological sciences department. So this institute, it occupies an entire block that is really at the crossroads of many different disciplines. So here again, when you go from basic discovery to delivery and impact on human health, you find that no one field really has the entire solution. To come up with a delivery, you actually have to bring ideas together from many different disciplines. And so this is the key philosophy now. The University of Wisconsin is somewhat unique, and it's really an outstanding example of technology transfer in the context of a public university, because going back to the 1920s, there was a fateful decision that technology transfer, things like patents and licensing, would not be part of the university, but would be handled by a separate, independent foundation, now known as the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation. So if you think about the basic idea of discovery in the biomedical sciences, creating impact in human health through products and technology, this technology transfer is done through this unique partnership between the university and a private research foundation. Now, what's happened in recent years, though, is despite that history of success, and to put this success in perspective, the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation currently has an endowment in excess of $2 billion, all attributed to licensing income and growth of that income stream. And that's even after, over the past 8 decades, donating more than $1 billion in research funding to the University of Wisconsin. So even after donating $1 billion, it still has an endowment of $2 billion. So we're not talking about this Morgridge Institute coming and creating something great out of nothing. We're taking a system that is already arguably one of the best in the world of public universities and trying to make it better. And the reason why we're trying to make it better is that it's become very clear in the past 10 years, and this is especially true related to biotechnology and pharmaceuticals, that the traditional pathway from discoveries in the universities, such as new biological targets, disease models, and so on, the IP generated by universities, that the pathway from there to actual products healthcare delivery, that pathway has become longer and riskier and full of attenuation and losses. So that's symbolized by this bridge, where it's going to be very difficult to make it all the way to the other end. Okay. And this has become especially relevant in the past 10 years. And because of this, the IP portfolios of universities, including that at the University of Wisconsin, has declined in market value. And one way that it manifests itself is that you have this great discovery, 15 years ago, you would have had lots of companies rushing to license it and pay. Today, you shop it around, nobody wants it. Okay? So that's a reality. So one of the visions of the Mortgage Institute for Research, and by the way, it's very easy in PowerPoint, a lot harder to do in real life, is you replace that, but this is the way to think of, this is the way I think. If you can replace that broken bridge with a modern bridge where there are fewer losses and notice the path is shorter now, then the IP portfolio of the university will grow dramatically in value because of market forces. Okay, so this is the most important slide for me at Wisconsin because it is my one slide explanation for why you can justify Wharf spending almost $200 million on this building. Okay, because they'd rather spend many researchers, and you know, I think like a researcher most of the time, I would rather spend the $200 million on my scientific projects and not necessarily on a building. Okay. But this building is part of the solution, part of that bridge. And so if we can deliver on this vision, then the increase in the market value of the total portfolio of a university that gets about $1 billion in federal research expenditures every year, that's a very large, one of the largest biomedical research portfolios in the world, that the IP value that would be increased through this mechanism would be many times the value of the building. Okay? So this is extremely important as we think about our activities to think, are we in fact replacing an old bridge with a new bridge? Okay. And so again, to point out that this is already a very successful enterprise that we're trying to make more successful. If you look at the commercial program profile for the stem cell patents, and there are hundreds of patents now over the years, you find that there is a range of companies, including therapeutic companies, research tool companies, diagnostic companies, startups founded by the university, also startups founded by other people, but also large U.S. and international companies. The last two columns are typically large pharmaceutical and biotech companies. Okay, so you can see that there are literally dozens of large companies that have licensed this portfolio as well. So this is clearly a world where things are happening and happening on a very big scale, but nevertheless, there are some fundamental questions about cyber infrastructure that I've identified. So if you look at the next slide, so there's some applications. They span many of the therapeutic areas of interest in the biotech and pharmaceutical world, including cardiovascular disease and neurodegenerative diseases, spinal cord injury, as well as cancer and burns and so on. And it's estimated that by the year 2015, the therapeutics market will reach about $11 billion and a 50% growth rate over the next 10 years. There are currently about 116 companies actively engaged in stem cell therapy. And there's obviously a lot of research activities in university labs, and this is where the connection to this conference is. We need data provenance from the start, long before the clinical phases. Because there's a culture, especially in the discovery world, where it's like the wild, wild west. Things are so exciting, things are happening so fast. In fact, there's certain peer pressure that there's like a material transfer agreement and culture where you have some exciting new materials that you've created, and it's expected that you will share that with your colleagues. And that's one of the great things about science. But of course, in this rush to get results from a discovery perspective, data provenance gets somewhere lost. So you borrowed it from who, and where did he or she get it from, and how many passages and expansions did you do after you brought them into your lab? And then somewhere in that process, an amazing result is achieved, and it has potential immense therapeutic value. The companies want to take it to the clinic and put it into humans. The FDA comes in and says, well, where's the data provenance on this? Okay, so it shows tremendous promise, but meanwhile, you've lost track of the history of what did that cell line do and where did it come from and so on. And so obviously in our society and given our ethics and structure, we will not allow that cell to be used in humans. Okay, so this is the sort of pitfall that this whole ecosystem faces. And the way to address that long before it happens, this will happen 5-10 years from now, but long before that happens, there's an opportunity to build the right kind of infrastructure to prevent that problem from occurring. And so this is the Wisconsin White Cell. This is another nonprofit organization that is very active in cell banking. This is also located on the University of Wisconsin campus. And they're doing, this is typically the process for ordering stem cells if you're a scientist or a company. And this process will be applied not just to the embryonic stem cells, but it's also the process that you can think about for iPS cells as well. And some of you in Hub Zero have been collaborating and communicating with Dave Ferris, who is one of the key people involved in this. And what I'm showing you next is the information system that he's designed for making it automating and streamlining the Y cell process from the logistics from keeping track of the progression of the cells and ultimately the distribution of the cells as well. And while what I'm showing here is for the current system, we're designing a similar system for the iPS cells. And furthermore, as I mentioned, Dr. Rupa Shevdi is in position now to basically train the next generation of stem cell scientists for the induced pluripotent stem cells. The first time ever that this course will be offered is in another couple of months. And this course is typically offered about 3 or 4 times a year. Many of the leading pharmaceutical companies as well as university researchers come here, including young postdocs. And we expect that as we train these scientists on the techniques, we will also expose them to these cyber infrastructure strategies. And the goal is to have them voluntarily, rather than duplicate this cyber infrastructure effort, to connect to this information architecture. So then you really do get a hub, because as more and more people join the network through the training, you have the opportunity to create a hub in the classical sense of the English word. And then if you have that kind of hub, then the IT kind of hub is easier to achieve. And so what I'm just going to show you very quickly is that in this user interface, you can see that a scientist or a user of the cells sends in a request to Y cell for cytogenetics testing. And then it can be from within Y cell, from the university, or from an outside lab. So it shows you who sent in that request. Provides the material to be tested. And what kind of tests? These are all various types of genotype and genetic testing. This is for chromosomal abnormalities. 10-day turnaround is the goal. And so then you have a status of, warnings are given for test steps. And review steps, so it shows, and this is like a workflow tool, so the reviewers can see what they have to do. And then you get some warnings. If the red is generally mean is something that's overdue, and green is in good shape, and yellow is a warning. And let's see. So if you go into a particular, it links to a database, you can see specific things. This is one of my favorites, by the way. Currently they use barcodes, but of course I've told them all about RFID. And so, that's an inside joke for those at Purdue that know that I have half of my research activities at Purdue were related to RFID. And so while today, RFID is not yet implemented in this system, and it's currently using barcodes, we have designed the system to switch over to RFID when that becomes the mainstream. So that will add even further automation and smartness to this to the cell banking warehouse. Now, by the way, one important message in all this is that in the past, in recent years, the world of stem cells, embryonic stem cells, during the years of the Bush administration, was 21 cell lines, and with the Obama administration and the stem cell research restrictions removed, the number of cell lines grew dramatically until it was several dozen cell lines. But again, these are not adult stem cells. It is estimated by the stem cell scientists, including Dr. Thompson, that within 5 years, we will go from a world of a few dozen cell lines to 10,000 cell lines. Because we will be interested in the adult stem cells of different individuals, and each individual, of course, may be motivated and interested in following their cell lines. So the world is going to change, because so you think about what it means for hub technologies and cyber infrastructure, you can actually get away with manual processes if you only have to keep track of 21 things, okay? Or you can at least convince yourself. There's no way that these manual processes will work when you have 10,000. And 10,000 is just the start. I mean, ultimately, you think of the number of people who are affluent enough and interested enough that this becomes part of their medical history and their medical world. And you can imagine millions and millions. Okay? And then remember, each individual has over 200 cell types. And so as you start transitioning from the pluripotent stem cells to different types of intermediate cell types and eventually all the different cell types in the body, the combinatorial explosion of the millions of people times the different passages. So you can imagine this is one of the really great information technology challenges. And so we can already see examples of the funding agencies misallocating many, many millions of dollars to people who say that they're the leaders in stem cell technology and personalized medicine, who have very little informatics and cyber infrastructure experiences and background. And the results are predictable. Within a very few years, you discover that their processes don't scale, and they really cannot manage the challenge of being a repository and being the provider of this technology in the context of transitioning from discovery science to actual delivery of healthcare solutions and medical impact. So, and we already know that even without personalized medicine, the world is filled with medical errors. It's one of the leading causes of death because of taking the wrong medication and so on. Now imagine the world of personalized medicine, you get the stem cell or cellular therapy, but it's not your cells. Somebody, you know, switched the vials or made a mistake. And so that's going to be even bigger problem when you go to personalized medicine. So, in closing, first of all, thank you again for the opportunity to come back and reconnect to the HubZero project and the HubZero consortium. I just want to leave you with this vision that we've created this institute that is focused on discovery biology and most notably with some of the leading research in regenerative biology and also the viral origins of cancer. We've also created two research centers, one related to medical devices, which I didn't talk about, but you'll be hearing a lot about in the coming years, especially because of our contribution to solving the medical isotope crisis. And also the pharmaceutical informatics area, which is my own area. Again, I didn't say very much about that today. Other than that part of the pharmaceutical informatics area is actually responsible for bringing informatics type of approaches and cyber infrastructure to the entire institute, in addition to doing its own research in computer-aided drug discovery. But the theme for today was there is an exciting vision and opportunity over the next over the coming decades to achieve a world of personalized medicine, but that world relies on strict adherence to cyber infrastructure and data provenance. So again, thank you very much for the invitation. I'd be happy to answer your questions.
Question?
Yeah, are there any treatments currently that use stem cells?
Yes, they're actually in clinical trials, and those were cell lines that had were actually managed by Y-cell. Therefore, the data provenance was very good. It's by a company called Geron. But those are just these are embryonic stem cells. To the best of my knowledge, at least in the FDA-regulated world, I'm not aware of clinical therapies that involve personalized adult stem cells. On the other hand, in terms of non-clinical applications, the most exciting technological impact has to do with toxicology screening in drug discovery. So the idea is, because of the inherent limitations of animal models, there's interest in developing tox screens for things like cardiotoxicity and so on by looking at a range of human genotypes and phenotypes, developing those cell lines, including the cardiomyocytes, and then using those to look at tox screening over a representative sample of the human population instead of using animals. And so those are actually going to have a bigger impact in the short term in terms of delivering a healthcare impact.